beach. We got a bottle of rum and ended up getting really drunk. And I went to TJ's house and, I hooked up with him. Tears slide down my cheeks and drip onto my collarbone.
Hooked up how?
Jake asks flatly. I hesitate, wondering if there's any possible way I can make this sound less awful than it is. But then Jake repeats himself.
Hooked up how?
So forcefully that the words spring out of me.
We slept together. I'm crying so hard I can barely get more words out. I'm sorry, Jake. I made a stupid, horrible mistake, and I'm so, so sorry.
Jake doesn't say anything for a minute. And when he speaks, his voice is icy cold.
You're sorry, huh? That's great. That's all right, then. As long as you're sorry.
I really am,
I start. But before I can continue, he springs up and rams his fist into the wall behind him. I can't help the startled cry that escapes me. The plaster cracks, raining white dust across the blue rug. Jake shakes his fist and hits the wall harder.
Fuck, Addie! You screwed my friend months ago. You've been lying to me ever since, and you're sorry? What the hell is wrong with you? I treat you like a queen.
I know,
I sob, staring at the bloody smears his knuckles left on the wall.
You let me hang out with a guy who's laughing his ass off behind my back while you jump out of his bed and into mine like nothing happened, pretending you give a shit about me.
Jake almost never swears in my presence, or if he does, he apologizes afterward.
I do. Jake, I love you. I've always loved you since the first time I saw you.
So why'd you do it? Why?
I've asked myself that question for months and can't come up with anything except weak excuses. I was drunk. I was stupid. I was insecure. I guess that last one's closest to the truth. Years of being not enough finally catching up with me.
I made a mistake. I'd do anything to fix it. If I could take it back, I would.
But you can't. Can you?
Jake asks. He's silent for a minute, breathing hard. I don't dare say another word.
Look at me.
I keep my head in my hands as long as I can.
Look at me, Addie. You fucking owe me that.
So I do. But I wish I hadn't. His face. That beautiful face I've loved since before it ever looked as good as it does now, is twisted with rage.
You ruined everything. You know that, right?
I know.
It comes out as a moan, like I'm a trapped animal. If I could gnaw my own limb off to escape this situation, I would.
Get out. Get the hell out of my house. I can't stand the sight of you.
I'm not sure how I manage to get up the stairs. Never mind out the door. Once I'm in the driveway, I scramble through my bag trying to find my phone. There's no way I can stand in Jake's driveway sobbing while I wait for Ashton. I need to walk to Clarendon Street and find her. Then a car across the street beeps softly, and through a haze of tears, I watch my sister lower her window. Her mouth droops as I approach. I thought it might go like this. Come on, get in. Mom's waiting for us.
Part 2. Hide and Seek. Chapter 10. Bronwyn. Monday, October 1st, 7:30 a.m. I get ready for school on Monday the way I always do. Up at 6 so I can run for half an hour. Oatmeal with berries and orange juice at 6:30, a shower 10 minutes later. Dry my hair, pick out clothes, put on sunscreen, scan the New York Times for 10 minutes, check my email, pack my books, make sure my phone's fully charged. The only thing that's different is the 7:30 meeting with my lawyer, Her name is Robin Stafford, and according to my father, she's a brilliant, highly successful criminal defense attorney. But not overly high profile. Not the kind of lawyer automatically associated with guilty rich people trying to buy their way out of trouble. She's right on time and gives me a wide, warm smile when Maeve leads her into the kitchen. I wouldn't be able to guess her age by looking at her, but the bio my father showed me last night says she's 41. She's wearing a cream-colored suit that's striking against her dark skin, subtle gold jewelry, and shoes that look expensive but not Jimmy Choo level. She takes a seat at our kitchen island across from my parents and me. Bronwyn, it's a pleasure. Let's talk about what you might expect today and how you should handle school. Sure, because that's my life now. School is something to be handled. She folds her hands in front of her. I'm not sure the police truly believed the four of you planned this together, but I do think they hoped to shock and pressure one of you into giving up useful information. That indicates their evidence is flimsy at best. If none of you point fingers and your stories line up, they don't have anywhere to take this investigation, and it's my belief it will ultimately be closed out as an accidental death. The vice that's been gripping my chest all morning loosens a little. Even though Simon was about to post those awful things about us? And there's that whole Tumblr thing going on? Robin gives an elegant little shrug. At the end of the day, that's nothing but gossip and trolling. I know you kids take it seriously, but in the legal world it's meaningless unless hard proof emerges to back it up. The best thing you can do is not talk about the case. Certainly not with the police, but not with school administrators either. What if they ask? Tell them you've retained counsel and can't answer questions without your lawyer present. I try to imagine having that conversation with Principal Gupta. I don't know what the school's heard about this, but me pleading the fifth would be a major red flag. Are you friendly with the other kids who were in detention that day? Robin asks. Not exactly. Cooper and I have some classes together, but... Bronwyn? My mother interrupts with a chill in her voice. You're friendly enough with Nate McCauley that he showed up here last night, for the third time. Robin sits straighter in her chair and I flush. That was a big topic of discussion last night, after my dad made Nate leave. Dad thought he'd stalked our address in a creepy way, so I had some explaining to do. Why has Nate been here three times, Bronwyn? Robin asks with a polite, interested air. It's no big deal. He gave me a ride home after Simon died. Then he stopped by last Friday to hang out for a while. And I don't know what he was doing here last night, since nobody would let me talk to him. It's the hanging out while your parents aren't home that disturbs me, my mother starts, but Robin interrupts her. Bronwyn, what's the nature of your relationship with Nate? I have no idea. Maybe you could help me analyze it. Is that part of your retainer? I hardly know him. I hadn't talked to him in years before last week. We're both in this weird situation, and it helps to be around other people going through the same thing. I recommend maintaining distance from the others, Robin says, ignoring my mother's evil eye in my direction. No need to give the police further ammunition for their theories. If your cell phone and email are examined, will they show recent communication with those three students? No, I say truthfully. That's good news. She glances at her watch, a slim gold Rolex. That's all we can address now if you're going to get to school on time, which you should. Business as usual. She flashes me that warm smile again. We'll talk more in depth later. I say goodbye to my parents, not quite able to look them in the eye, and call for Maeve as I grab the keys to the Volvo. I spend the whole drive steeling myself for something awful to happen once we get to school. But it's weirdly normal. No police lying in wait for me. Nobody's looking at me any differently than they have since the first Tumblr post came out. Still, I'm only half paying attention to Kate and Yumiko's chatter after homeroom, my eyes roaming the hallway. There's only one person I want to talk to, even though it's exactly who I'm supposed to stay away from. Catch you guys later, okay? I murmur, and intercept Nate after he ducks into the back stairwell. If he's surprised to see me, he doesn't show it.
Bronwyn, how's the family?
I lean against the wall next to him and lower my voice. I wanted to apologize for my dad making you leave last night. He's kind of freaked out by all this.
Wonder why?
Nate drops his voice as well.
You been searched yet?
My eyes widen, and he laughs darkly.
Didn't think so. I was. You're probably not supposed to be talking to me, right?
I can't help but glance around the empty stairwell. I'm already paranoid, and Nate's not helping. I have to keep reminding myself that we did not, in fact, conspire to commit murder. Why did you stop by? His eyes search mine, as though he's about to say something profound about life and death and the presumption of innocence.
I was going to apologize for stealing Jesus from you.
I recoil a little. I have no idea what he's talking about. Is he making some kind of religious allegory?
What? In the fourth grade nativity play at St. Pius, I stole Jesus and you had to carry a bag wrapped in a blanket. Sorry about that.
I stare at him for a second as the tension flows out of me, leaving me limp and slightly giddy. I punch him in the shoulder, startling him so much he actually laughs. I knew it was you. Why'd you do that?
To get a rise out of you.
He grins at me, and for a second I forget everything except the fact that Nate McCauley still has an adorable smile.
Also, I wanted to talk to you about all this. But I guess it's too late. You must be lawyered up by now, right?
His smile disappears. Yes, but I want to talk to you, too. The bell rings, and I pull out my phone. Then I remember Robin asking about communication records between the four of us, and stuff it back into my bag. Nate catches the gesture and snorts another humorless laugh.
Yeah. Exchanging numbers is a shit idea, unless you want to use this.
He reaches into his backpack and hands me a flip phone. I take it gingerly. What is it?
An extra phone. I have a few.
I run my thumb across the cover with a dawning idea of what it might be for. And he adds hastily,
it's new. Nobody's going to call it or anything. But I have the number. I'll call you. You can answer or not. Up to you.
He pauses and adds,
just don't, you know, leave it lying around. They get a warrant for your phone and computer. That's all they can touch. They can't go through your whole house.
I'm pretty sure my expensive lawyer would tell me not to take legal advice from Nate McCauley. And she'd probably have something to say about the fact that he has an apparently inexhaustible supply of the same cheap phones that corralled us all in detention last week. I watch him head up the stairs, knowing I should drop the phone into the nearest trash can. But I put it in my backpack instead.
Cooper. Monday, October 1st, 11 a.m. It's almost a relief to be at school. Better than home, where Pop spent hours ranting about how Simon's a liar and the police are incompetent, and the school should be on the hook for this, and lawyers will cost a fortune we don't have. He didn't ask if any of it was true. We're in a weird limbo now. Everything's different, but it all looks the same. Except Jake and Addie, who are walking around like they want to kill and die, respectively. Bronwyn gives me the least convincing smile ever in the hallway, her lips pressed so tight they almost disappear. Nate's nowhere in sight. We're all waiting for something to happen, I guess. After Jim, something does, but it doesn't have anything to do with me. My friends and I are heading for the locker room after playing soccer, lagging behind everyone else, and Luis is going on about some new junior girl he's got his eye on. Our gym teacher opens the door to let a bunch of kids inside when Jake suddenly whirls around, grabs TJ by the shoulder, and punches him in the face. Of course. TF from About That is TJ Forrester. The lack of a J confused me. I grab Jake's arms, pulling him back before he can throw another punch, but he's so furious he almost gets away from me before Luis steps in to help. Even then, two of us can barely hold him. You asshole! Jake spits at TJ, who staggers but doesn't fall. TJ puts a hand to his bloody, probably broken mess of a nose. He doesn't make any effort to go after Jake. Jake, come on, man, I say as the gym teacher races toward us. You're gonna get suspended. Worth it, Jake says bitterly. So instead of today's big story being Simon, it's about how Jake Reardon got sent home for punching TJ Forrester after gym class. And since Jake refused to speak to Addie before he left, and she's practically in tears, everyone's pretty sure they know why. How could she? Keely murmurs in the lunch line as Addie shuffles around like a sleepwalker. We don't know the whole story, I remind her. I guess it's good Jake's not here, since Addie sits with us at lunch like usual. I'm not sure she'd have the nerve otherwise, but she doesn't talk to anybody and nobody talks to her. They're pretty obvious about it. Vanessa, who's always been the bitchiest girl in our group, physically turns away when Addie takes the chair next to her. Even Keely doesn't make any effort to include Addie in the conversation. Bunch of hypocrites. Luis was on Simon's app for the same damn thing, and Vanessa tried to give me a hand job at a pool party last month, so they shouldn't be judging anyone. How's it going, Addie? I ask, ignoring the stares of the rest of the table. Don't be nice, Cooper. She keeps her head down, her voice so low I can hardly hear it. It's worse if you're nice. Addie, all the frustration and fear I've been feeling finds its way into my voice, and when Addie looks up, a jolt of understanding passes between us. There's a million things we should be talking about, but we can't say any of them. It'll be all right. Keely puts her hand on my arm, asking, "What do you think?" And I realize I've missed an entire conversation. About what? She gives me a little shake. About Halloween. What should we be for Vanessa's party? I'm disoriented, like I just got yanked into some shiny video game version of the world where everything's too bright and I don't understand the rules. God, Keely, I don't know. Whatever. That's almost a month away. Olivia clucks her tongue disapprovingly. Typical guy. You have no idea how hard it is to find a costume that's sexy but not slutty. Luis waggles his brows at her. Just be slutty, then, he suggests, and Olivia smacks his arm. The cafeteria is too warm, almost hot, and I wipe my damp brow as Addie and I exchange another look. Keely pokes me. Give me your phone. What? I want to look at that picture we took last week at Seaport Village. That woman in the flapper dress, she looked amazing. Maybe I could do something like that. I shrug and pull out my phone, unlocking it and handing it over. She squeezes my arm as she opens my photos. You look totally hot in one of those gangster suits. She hands the phone to Vanessa, who gives an exaggerated breathless, "Oh!" Addie pushes food around on her plate without ever lifting her fork to her mouth, and I'm about to ask her if she wants me to get her something else when my phone rings. Vanessa keeps hold of it and snorts. Who calls during lunch? Everybody you know is already here. She looks at the screen, then at me. Oh, Cooper, Who's Chris? Should Keely be jealous? I don't answer for a few seconds too long, then too fast. Just, a guy I know, from baseball. My whole face feels hot and prickly as I take the phone from Vanessa and send it to voicemail. I wish like hell I could take that call, but now's not the time. Vanessa raises an eyebrow. A boy who spells Chris with a K? Yeah, he's German. God, stop talking. I put my phone in my pocket and turn to Keely, whose lips are slightly parted like she's about to ask a question. I'll call him back later. So, a flapper, huh? I'm about to head home after the last bell when Coach Ruffalo stops me in the hall.
You didn't forget about our meeting, did you?
I exhale in frustration because, yeah, I did. Pop's leaving work early so we can meet with a lawyer, but Coach Ruffalo wants to talk college recruiting. I'm torn because I'm pretty sure Pop would want me to do both at the same time. Since that's not possible, I follow Coach Ruffalo and figure I'll make it quick. His office is next to the gym and smells like 20 years' worth of student-athletes passing through. In other words, not good.
My phone's ringing off the hook for you, Cooper,
he says as I sit across from him in a lopsided metal chair that creaks under my weight.
UCLA, Louisville, and Illinois are putting together full scholarship offers. They're all pushing for a November commitment, even though I told them there's no way you'll make a decision before spring.
He catches my expression and adds,
It's good to keep your options open.
Obviously, the draft's a real possibility, but the more interest there is on the college level, the better you'll look to the majors.
Yes, sir.
It's not draft strategy I'm worried about. It's how these colleges will react if the stuff on Simon's app gets out. Or if this whole thing spirals and I keep getting investigated by the police. Are all these offers going to dry up? Or am I innocent until proven guilty? I'm not sure if I should be telling any of this to Coach Ruffalo.
It's just hard to keep them all straight.
He picks up a thin sheaf of stapled together papers, waving them at me.
I've done it for you. Here's a list of every college I've been in touch with and their current offer. I've highlighted the ones I think are the best fit or will be most impressive to the majors. I wouldn't necessarily put Cal State or UC Santa Barbara on the short list, but they're both local and offering facility tours. You want to schedule those some weekend? Let me know.
Okay. I have some family stuff coming up, so I might be kind of busy for a while.
Sure, sure. No rush, no pressure. It's entirely up to you, Cooper.
People always say that, but it doesn't feel true about anything. I thank Coach Ruffalo and head into the almost empty hallway. I have my phone in one hand and Coach's list in the other, and I'm so lost in thought as I look between them that I almost mow someone over in my path.
Sorry,
I say, taking in a slight figure with his arms wrapped around a box.
Hey, Mr. Avery, you need help carrying that?
No, thank you, Cooper.
I'm a lot taller than he is, and when I look down, I don't see anything but folders in the box. I guess he can manage those. Mr. Avery's watery eyes narrow when he sees my phone.
I wouldn't want to interrupt your texting.
I was just...
I trail off, since explaining the lawyer appointment I'm almost late for won't win me any points. Mr. Avery sniffs and adjusts his grip on the box.
I don't understand you kids. So obsessed with your screens and your gossip.
He grimaces like the word tastes bad, and I'm not sure what to say. Is he making a reference to Simon? I wonder if the police bothered questioning Mr. Avery this weekend, or if he's been disqualified by virtue of not having a motive. That they know of, anyway. He shakes himself like he doesn't know what he's talking about either.
Anyway, if you'll excuse me, Cooper.
All he'd have to do to get past me is step aside, but I guess that's my job.
Right,
I say, moving out of his way. I watch him shuffle down the hall and decide to leave my stuff in my locker and head for the car. I'm late enough as it is. I'm stopped at the last red light before my house when my phone beeps.
I looked down, expecting a text from Keeley, because somehow I ended up promising we'd get together tonight to plan Halloween costumes. But it's from my mom. Meet us at the hospital. Nani had a heart attack.
Chapter 11.
Nate. Monday, October 1st, 11:50 p.m. I made a round of calls to my suppliers this morning to tell them I'm out of commission for a while. Then I threw away that phone. I still have a couple of others. I usually pay cash for a bunch at Walmart and rotate them for a few months before replacing them. So after I've watched as many Japanese horror movies as I can stand, and it's almost midnight, I take a new phone out and call the one I gave Bronwyn. It rings 6 times before she picks up, and she sounds nervous as hell. Hello? I'm tempted to disguise my voice and ask if I can buy a bag of heroin to mess with her, but she'd probably throw the phone out and never talk to me again. Hey. It's late, she says accusingly. Were you sleeping? No, she admits. I can't. Me either. Neither of us says anything for a minute. I'm stretched out on my bed with a couple of thin pillows behind me, staring at paused screen credits in Japanese. I click off the movie and scroll through the channel guide. Nate, do you remember Olivia Kendrick's birthday party in 5th grade? I do, actually. It was the last birthday party I ever went to at St. Pius, before my dad withdrew me because we couldn't pay the tuition anymore. Olivia invited the whole class and had a scavenger hunt in her yard in the woods behind it. Bronwyn and I were on the same team, and she tore through those clues like it was her job and she was up for a promotion. We won, and all 5 of us got $20 iTunes gift cards. Yeah. I think that's the last time you and I spoke before all this. Maybe. I remember better than she probably realizes. In 5th grade, my friends started noticing girls, and at one point they all had girlfriends for like a week. Stupid kid stuff where they asked a girl out, the girl said yes, and then they ignored each other. While we were walking through Olivia's woods, I watched Bronwyn's ponytail swing in front of me and wondered what she'd say if I asked her to be my girlfriend. I didn't do it, though. Where'd you go after St. Pi? She asks. Granger. St. Pius went up to 8th grade, so I wasn't in school with Bronwyn again until high school. By then, she was in full-on overachiever mode. She pauses, as though she's waiting for me to continue, and laughs a little. Nate, why'd you call me if you're only going to give one-word answers to everything? Maybe you're not asking the right questions. Okay. Another pause. Did you do it? I don't have to ask what she means. Yes and no. You'll have to be more specific. Yes, I sold drugs while on probation for selling drugs. No, I didn't dump peanut oil in Simon Kelleher's cup. You? Same, she says quietly. Yes and no. So you cheated? Yes. Her voice wavers. And if she starts crying, I don't know what I'll do. Pretend the call dropped, maybe? But she pulls herself together. I'm really ashamed. And I'm so afraid of people finding out. She's all worried sounding, so I probably shouldn't laugh, but I can't help it. So you're not perfect. So what? Welcome to the real world. I'm familiar with the real world. Bronwyn's voice is cool. I don't live in a bubble. I'm sorry for what I did, that's all. She probably is, but it's not the whole truth. Reality's messier than that. She had months to confess if it was really eating at her, and she didn't. I don't know why it's so hard for people to admit that sometimes they're just assholes who screw up because they don't expect to get caught. You sound more worried about what people are going to think, I say. There's nothing wrong with worrying about what people think. It keeps you off probation. My main phone beeps. It's next to my bed on the scarred side table that lurches every time I touch it, because it's missing a leg tip and I'm too lazy to fix it. I roll over to read a text from Amber. You up? I'm about to tell Bronwyn I have to go when she heaves a sigh. Sorry. Low blow. It's more complicated than that for me. I've disappointed both my parents, but it's worse for my dad. He's always pushing against stereotypes because he's not from here. He built this great reputation, and I could tarnish the whole thing with one stupid move. I'm about to tell her nobody thinks that way. Her family looks pretty untouchable from where I sit. But I guess everyone has shit to deal with, and I don't know hers. Where's your dad from? I ask instead. He was born in Colombia, but moved here when he was 10. What about your mom? Oh, her family's been here forever. Fourth generation Irish or something? Mine too, I say. But let's just say my fall from grace won't surprise anyone. She sighs. This is all so surreal, isn't it? That anybody could think either one of us would actually kill Simon? You're taking me at my word? I ask. I'm on probation, remember? Yeah, but I was there when you tried to help Simon. You'd have to be a pretty good actor to fake that. If I'm enough of a sociopath to kill Simon, I can fake anything, right? You're not a sociopath. How do you know? I say it like I'm making fun, but I really want to know the answer. I'm the guy who got searched, the obvious outlier and scapegoat, as Officer Lopez said. Someone who lies whenever it's convenient and would do it in a heartbeat to save his own ass. I'm not sure how all that adds up to trust for someone I hadn't talked to in 6 years. Bronwyn doesn't answer right away, and I stop channel surfing at the Cartoon Network to watch a snippet of some new show with a kid and a snake. It doesn't look promising. I remember how you used to look out for your mom, she finally says. When she'd show up at school and act, you know, like she was sick or something. Like she was sick or something. I guess Bronwyn could be referring to the time my mother screamed at Sister Flynn during parent-teacher conferences and ended up ripping all our artwork off the walls. Or the way she'd cry on the curb while she was waiting to pick me up from soccer practice. There's a lot to choose from. I really liked your mom, Bronwyn says tentatively when I don't answer. She used to talk to me like I was a grown-up. She'd swear at you, you mean? I say, and Bronwyn laughs. I always thought it was more like she was swearing with me. Something about the way she says that gets to me. Like she could see the person under all the other crap. She liked you. I think about Bronwyn in the stairwell today. Her hair still in that shiny ponytail and her face bright. As if everything is interesting and worth her time. If she were around, she'd like you now. She used to tell me, Bronwyn pauses. She said you only teased me so much because you had a crush on me. I glance at Amber's text, still unanswered. I might have. I don't remember. Like I said, I lie whenever it's convenient. Bronwyn's quiet for a minute. I should go. At least try to sleep. Yeah, me too. I guess we'll see what happens tomorrow, huh?
Guess so.
Well, bye. And, Nate?
She speaks quickly in a rush.
I had a crush on you back then, for whatever that's worth. Nothing, probably. But anyway, FYI. So good night.
After she hangs up, I put the phone on my bedside table and pick up the other one. I read Amber's message again, then type, "Come over." Bronwyn's naive if she thinks there's more to me than that.
Addie, Wednesday, October 3rd, 7:50 a.m. Ashton keeps making me go to school. My mother couldn't care less. As far as she's concerned, I've ruined all our lives, so it doesn't much matter what I do anymore. She doesn't say those exact words, but they're etched across her face every time she looks at me. $5,000 just to talk to a lawyer, Adelaide, she hisses at me over breakfast Thursday morning. I hope you know that's coming out of your college fund. I'd roll my eyes if I had the energy. We both know I don't have a college fund. She's been on the phone to my father in Chicago for days, hassling him for the money. He doesn't have much to spare, thanks to his second, younger family, but he'll probably send at least half to shut her up and feel good about what an involved parent he is. Jake still won't talk to me, and I miss him so much. It's like I've been hollowed out by a nuclear blast, and there's nothing left but ashes fluttering inside brittle bones. I've sent him dozens of texts that aren't only unanswered, they're unread. He unfriended me on Facebook, and unfollowed me on Instagram and Snapchat. He's pretending I don't exist, and I'm starting to think he's right. If I'm not Jake's girlfriend, who am I? He was supposed to be suspended all week for hitting TJ, but his parents raised a fuss about how Simon's death has put everyone on edge, so I guess he's back today. The thought of seeing him makes me sick enough that I decided to stay home. Ashton had to drag me out of bed. She's staying with us indefinitely, for now. You're not going to wither up and die from this, Addie, Ashton lectures as she shoves me toward the shower. He doesn't get to erase you from the world. God, you made a stupid mistake. It's not like you murdered someone. Well, she adds, with a short, sarcastic laugh, I guess the jury's still out on that one. Oh, the gallows humor in our household now. Who knew Prentice girls had it in them to be even a little bit funny? Ashton drives me to Bayview and drops me off out front. Keep your chin up, she advises. Don't let that sanctimonious control freak get you down. God, Ash, I did cheat on him, you know. He's not unprovoked. She purses her lips in a hard line. Still. I get out of the car and try to steel myself for the day. School used to be so easy. I belonged to everything without even trying. Now I'm barely hanging on to the edges of who I used to be. And when I catch my reflection in a window, I hardly recognize the girl staring back at me. She's in my clothes, the kind of form-fitting top and tight jeans that Jake likes, but her hollow cheeks and dead eyes don't match the outfit. My hair looks tremendous, though. At least I have that going for me. There's only one person who looks worse than me at school, and that's Janae. She must have lost 10 pounds since Simon died, and her skin's a mess. Her mascara's running all the time. So I guess she cries in the bathroom between classes as much as I do. It's surprising we haven't run into each other yet. I see Jake at his locker almost as soon as I enter the hallway. All the blood rushes out of my head, making me so lightheaded I actually sway as I walk toward him. His expression is calm and preoccupied as he twirls his combination. For a second, I hope everything's going to be fine, that his time away from school has helped him cool off and forgive me. "Hi, Jake," I say. His face changes in an instant, from neutral to livid. He yanks his locker open with a scowl and pulls out an armful of books, stuffing them into his backpack. He slams his locker, shoulders his backpack, and turns away. "Are you ever going to talk to me again?" I ask. My voice is tiny, breathless, pathetic. He turns and gives me such a hate-filled look that I step backward.
"Not if I can help it."
"Don't cry. Don't cry." Everyone's staring at me as Jake stalks away. I catch Vanessa smirking from a few lockers over. She's loving this. How did I ever think she was my friend? She'll probably go after Jake soon, if she hasn't already. I stumble in front of my own locker, my hand stretching toward the lock. It takes a few seconds for the word written in thick black Sharpie to sink in. Whore. Muffled laughter surrounds me as my eyes trace the two V's that make up the W. They cross each other in a distinctive loopy scrawl. I've made dozens of pep rally posters for the Bayview Wildcats with Vanessa and teased her for her funny-looking W's. She didn't even try to hide it. I guess she wanted me to know. I force myself to walk, not run, to the nearest bathroom. Two girls stand at the mirror, fixing their makeup, and I duck past them into the farthest stall. I collapse onto the toilet seat and cry silently, burying my head in my hands. The first bell rings, but I stay where I am, tears rolling down my cheeks until I'm cried out. I fold my arms onto my knees and lower my head, immobile as the second bell rings and girls come in and out of the bathroom again. Snatches of conversation float through the room, and yeah, some of it's about me. I plug my ears and try not to listen. It's the middle of third period by the time I uncoil myself and stand. I unlock the stall door and head for the mirror, pushing my hair away from my face. My mascara is washed away, but I've been here long enough that my eyes aren't puffy. I stare at my reflection and try to collect my scattered thoughts. I can't deal with classes today. I'd go to the nurse's office and claim a headache, but I don't feel comfortable there now that I'm a suspected EpiPen thief. That leaves only one option, getting out of here and going home. I'm in the back stairwell with my hand on the door when heavy footsteps pound the stairs. I turn to see TJ Forrester coming down. His nose is still swollen and framed by a black eye. He stops when he sees me, one hand gripping the banister.
"Hey, Addie.
Shouldn't you be in class?"
"I have a doctor's appointment."
He puts a hand to his nose and grimaces.
"I might have a deviated septum."
"Serves you right." The bitter words burst out before I can stop them. TJ's mouth falls open, then closes, and his Adam's apple bobs up and down.
"I didn't say anything to Jake, Addie. I swear to God. I didn't want this to come out any more than you did. It's messed things up for me, too."
He touches his nose again gingerly. "I wasn't actually thinking about Jake. I was thinking about Simon." But of course TJ wouldn't know anything about the unpublished posts. How did Simon know, though?
"We were the only two people there," I hedge. "You must have told somebody."
TJ shakes his head, wincing as though the movement hurts.
"We were kissing on a public beach before we got to my house, remember? Anyone could have seen us."
"But they wouldn't have known..." I stop, realizing Simon's sight never said TJ and I slept together. He implied it pretty heavily, but that was it. Maybe I'd over-confessed. The thought sickens me. Although I'm not sure I could have managed to tell Jake only a half-truth anyway. He'd have gotten it out of me eventually. TJ looks at me with regret in his eyes.
"I'm sorry this sucks so bad for you. For what it's worth, I think Jake's being a jerk. But I didn't tell anybody. He puts a hand over his heart. Swear on my granddad's grave. I know that doesn't mean anything to you, but it does to me. I finally nod, and he lets out a deep breath. Where are you going? Home. I can't stand being here. All my friends hate me. I'm not sure why I'm telling him this, other than the fact that I don't have anyone else to tell. I doubt they'll even let me sit with them now that Jake's back. It's true. Cooper's out today, visiting his sick grandmother, and probably, although he didn't say so, meeting with his lawyer. With him gone, nobody will dare stand up to Jake's anger. Or want to. Screw them. TJ gives me a lopsided grin. If they're still being assholes tomorrow, come sit with me. They want to talk. Let's give them something to talk about. It shouldn't make me smile, but it almost does.
Chapter 12. Bronwyn. Thursday, October 4th, 12:20 p.m. I got lulled into a false sense of complacency. It happens, I guess, even during the worst week of your life. Horrible, earth-shattering stuff piles on top of you until you're about to suffocate, and then it stops. And nothing else happens, so you start to relax and think you're in the clear. That's a rookie mistake that smacks me in the face Thursday during lunch, when the usual low-grade cafeteria buzz suddenly grows and swells. At first, I look around, interested, like anyone would be, and wondering why everyone suddenly pulled out their phones. But before I can take mine out, I notice the heads swiveling in my direction. Oh. Maeve is quicker than me, and her soft exhalation as she scans her phone is loaded with so much regret that my heart sinks. She catches her bottom lip between her teeth and wrinkles her forehead. Bronwyn, it's, another tumbler. About, well, here. I take her phone, heart pounding, and read the exact same words Detective Mendoza showed me on Sunday after Simon's funeral. First time this app has ever featured good girl BR, possessor of school's most perfect academic record. It's all there. Simon's unpublished entries for each of us, with an added note at the bottom. Did you think I was joking about killing Simon? Read it and weep, kids. Everyone in detention with Simon last week had an extra special reason for wanting him gone. Exhibit A, the posts above, which he was about to publish on about that. Now, here's your assignment. Connect the dots. Is everybody in it together? Or is somebody pulling strings? Who's the puppet master, and who's the puppet? I'll give you a hint to get you started. Everyone's lying. Go. I raise my eyes and lock on Maeve's. She knows the truth, all of it, but I haven't told Yumiko or Kate, because I thought maybe this could stay contained, quiet, while the police ran their investigation in the background, and then closed it out from lack of evidence. I'm pathetically naive, obviously. Bronwyn? I can barely hear Yumiko over the roaring in my ears. Is this for real? Fuck this Tumblr bullshit! I'd be startled at Maeve's language if I hadn't vaulted over my surprise threshold 2 minutes ago. I bet I could hack that stupid thing and figure out who's behind it. Maeve, no! My voice is so loud. I lower it and switch to Spanish. No lo hagas. No queremos. I force myself to stop talking as Kate and Yumiko keep staring at me. You can't. We don't want. That should be enough for now. But Maeve won't shut up. I don't care, she says furiously. You might, but I... Saved by the loudspeaker, sort of. Deja vu seizes me as a disembodied voice floats through the room. Attention, please. Would Cooper Clay, Nate McCauley, Adelaide Prentice, and Bronwyn Rojas please report to the main office? Cooper Clay, Nate McCauley, Adelaide Prentice, and Bronwyn Rojas to the main office. I don't remember getting to my feet, but I must have, because here I am, moving, shuffling like a zombie past the stairs and whispers, weaving through tables until I get to the cafeteria exit. Down the hallway, past homecoming posters that are 3 weeks old now, our planning committee is slacking, which would inspire more disdain if I weren't on it. When I get to the main office, the receptionist gestures toward the conference room with the weary wave of someone who thinks I should know the drill by now. I am the last to arrive. At least I think I am, unless Bayview police or school committee members are joining us. "Close the door, Bronwyn," Principal Gupta says. I can fly and sidle past her to take a seat between Nate and Addie, across from Cooper. Principal Gupta steeples her fingers under her chin.
"I'm sure I don't have to tell you why you're here. We've been keeping an eye on that repulsive Tumblr site and got today's update as soon as you did. At the same time, we've had a request from the Bayview Police Department to make the student body available for interviews starting tomorrow. My understanding, based on conversations with police, is that today's Tumblr is an accurate reflection of posts Simon wrote before he died. I realize most of you now have legal representation, which, of course, the school respects. But this is a safe space. If there's anything you'd like to tell me that might help the school better understand the pressures you are facing, now is the time."
I stare at her as my knees start to tremble. Is she for real? Now is most definitely not the time. Still, I feel this almost irresistible urge to answer her, to explain myself, until a hand under the table grasps mine. Nate doesn't look at me, but his fingers thread through mine, warm and strong, resting against my shaking leg. He's in his Guinness t-shirt again, and the material stretches thin and soft across his shoulders, as though it's been through hundreds of washes. I glance at him, and he gives a tiny, almost imperceptible shake of his head.
"I got nothing more to say than what I told you last week," Cooper drawls.
"Me either," Addie says quickly. Her eyes are red-rimmed, and she looks exhausted, her pixie features pinched. She's so pale, I notice the light dusting of freckles across her nose for the first time. Or maybe she's just not wearing makeup. I think with a stab of sympathy that she's been the hardest hit of anyone so far.
"I hardly think," Principal Gupta begins, when the door opens and the receptionist sticks her head in.
"Bayview Police on line one," she says, and Principal Gupta gets to her feet.
"Excuse me for a moment."
She closes the door behind her, and the four of us sit in strained silence, listening to the hum of the air conditioner. It's the first time we've all been in one room together since Officer Budapest questioned us last week. I almost laugh when I remember how clueless we were then, arguing about unfair detentions and junior prom court. Although, to be fair, that was mostly me. Nate lets go of my hand and tips his chair back, surveying the room.
"Well, this is awkward."
"Are you guys all right?" My words come out in a rush, surprising me. I'm not sure what I intended to say, but that wasn't it. This is unreal, that they suspect us. "It was an accident," Addie says immediately. Not like she's positive, though. More like she's testing a theory. Cooper slides his eyes over to Nate.
"Weird kind of accident. How does peanut oil get in a cup all by itself?"
Maybe someone came into the room at some point and we didn't notice, I say, and Nate rolls his eyes at me. I know it sounds ridiculous, but you have to consider everything, right? It's not impossible. Lots of people hated Simon, Addie says. From the hard set of her jaw, she's one of them. He ruined plenty of lives. You guys remember Aiden Wu? In our class, transferred sophomore year? I'm the only one who nods, so Addie turns her gaze on me. My sister knows his sister from college. Aiden didn't transfer for the hell of it. He had a breakdown after Simon posted about his cross-dressing.
Seriously? Nate asks. Cooper runs a hand back and forth over his hair.
You remember those spotlight posts Simon used to do when he first launched the app? Addie asks. More in-depth stuff, like a blog almost? My throat gets tight. I remember. Well, he did that with Aiden, Addie says. It was straight up evil. Something about her tone makes me uneasy. I never thought I'd hear shallow little Addie Prentice speak with such venom in her voice, or have an opinion of her own. Cooper jumps in hastily, like he's worried she's going to go off on a rant.
That's what Leah Jackson said at the memorial service. I ran into her under the bleachers. She said we were all hypocrites for treating him like some kind of martyr.
Well, there you go, Nate says. You were right, Bronwyn. The entire school's probably been walking around with bottles of peanut oil in their backpacks, waiting for their chance.
Not just any peanut oil, Addie says, and we all turn to her. It would have to be cold-pressed for a person with allergies to react to it. The gourmet type, basically. Nate stares at her, brow creased.
How would you know that?
Addie shrugs. I saw it on the Food Network once.
Maybe that's the sort of thing you keep to yourself when Gupta comes back, Nate suggests, and the ghost of a grin flits across Addie's face.
Cooper glares at Nate.
This isn't a joke!
Nate yawns, unperturbed.
Feels like it sometimes.
I swallow hard, my mind still churning through the conversation. Leah and I were friendly once. We partnered in a model United Nations competition that brought us to the state finals at the beginning of junior year. Simon had wanted to participate, too, but we told him the wrong application deadline and he missed the cutoff. It wasn't on purpose, but he never believed that and was furious with both of us. A few weeks later, he started writing about Leah's sex life on About That. Usually, Simon posted something once and let it go. But with Leah, he kept the updates coming. It was personal. I'm sure he'd have done the same to me if there had been anything to find back then.
When Leah started sliding off the rails, she asked me if I'd misled Simon on purpose.
I hadn't, but still felt guilty, especially once she slit her wrists. Nothing was the same for her after Simon started his campaign against her. I don't know what going through something like that does to a person. Principal Gupta comes back into the room, shutting the door behind her and settling into her seat.
My apologies, but that couldn't wait. Where were we?
Silence falls for a few seconds until Cooper clears his throat.
With all due respect, ma'am, I think we were agreeing we can't have this conversation.
There's a steel in his voice that wasn't there before. And in an instant, I feel the energy of the room coalesce and shift. We don't trust one another, that's pretty obvious. But we trust Principal Gupta and the Bayview Police Department even less. She sees it too and pushes her chair back.
It's important, you know, this door is always open to you, she says.
But we're already getting to our feet and opening the door ourselves. I'm out of sorts and anxious for the rest of the day, going through the motions of everything I'm supposed to do at school and at home.